We get the hour underway by welcoming to the program comedian, writer, co-creator of The Daily Show, founder of Air America. She's got a brand new special called Corona Borealis, available on Vimeo On Demand. She is a damn comedy genius. Liz Winstead joins us. Liz, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Cannot wait to see the special. It looks like you picked a beautiful setting to discuss this absolute crap storm of a year.
Well, you know, it's, as you rifled off some of the things that I've done, you know, it's sort of been my career to respond to the world and all of its ugliness. And so this was a year where it was the worst year ever. And then we were in quarantine and had COVID, and there was no place to perform. So I was beside myself in New York at the height of the pandemic, which is where I live in Brooklyn. And I also live part of the year in Minnesota, which is where I'm from. And so having the pandemic hit, then having the murder of George Floyd happen and having the uprising happen here and just watching all this turmoil happen, I was like, how am I going to do a show that is COVID friendly, that will speak to everything? So I came back to Minnesota and I did what Minnesotans do, which is gather by a lake. And I had 20 comedy fans in kayaks watching the first half of the show. I built a rickety stage with a friend out of what do you call the pallets and lights and old crates. And then we did that in September. And then you guys are in Maine, so you know, it's like, I can't do a show that responds to the world without knowing what the election results are. So I decided to shoot the second half of the show after the election. And in Minnesota, that means freezing. So 19-degree weather. I had 20 people gathered around 5 fire pits. And we finished off the show outside. It would have been a perfect Maine show as well as a perfect Minnesota show.
But I understand you were inspired by Amy Klobuchar.
Well, I figured, she will never let you forget that she stood in a snowstorm and announced her run for president. And I was like, well, you know what? If you will go watch Amy Klobuchar give a boring political speech about running for president, I think you'll come and see me. I'm offering free booze and jokes. And it worked out.
And you mentioned this was really a hands-on experience. Now, is this just publicity? Did you really put together the picnic baskets?
Yes, I put together all the picnic baskets. I cooked all the food. I baked all the pie. I really wanted people, knowing that people had been really feeling, you know, scared and alone and frustrated and hadn't been out in a social gathering at all, I wanted to create a space that felt incredibly safe for people to come. And so I have a friend who lives on a lake, and they have acreage on this lake that's massive. So I had 10 picnic tables that were spaced 10 feet apart. Each individual picnic was made so that you just walked in and sat down at your table and opened up your picnic. And the only person that came in contact with your food besides you was me. And I had a bottle of wine there for each person. And it just worked out really good. I'm sort of weird and crafty in that way, too. I get my yayas out cooking and decorating and making things. And so the whole experience from soup to nuts was, I got to be honest, something that I need to do because responding to the world, I said, is my jam, but also for my own self-preservation of being able to connect with other people and have some humanity throughout the whole process. It was really fun, actually. And everybody who worked on the crew, there was only 8 people so that we could be safe. And everybody on the crew also felt like we really need to do this. We really need to laugh. 2020 has weighed on us like a brick. There's been so much, you know, just like asshattery that it needs to come out into the world. And so it was a labor of love and a catharsis for everybody. And I think everybody had a really good time.
We're talking with Liz Winstead here on Downtown. Let's talk about your hometown. I've got friends who've worked in the Minneapolis St. Paul theater scene at the Guthrie and other places for years. And I guess we were all shocked by what happened to George Floyd. I was shocked that it happened in Minneapolis. And then it was just another stark reminder that racism is everywhere in this country. And there are no boundaries that prevent that from happening.
Right. And also, you know, it wasn't the first time in Minneapolis. There was Philando Castile. There was others. You know, police violence, over-policing has been something that has happened in Minneapolis for a while. And so one thing that's really was really interesting in my special is that I really wanted to address George Floyd. You know, the concept when people talk about defund the police, you know, what does that mean? Because people hear that and their, you know, shackles go up and people are very divided on what the definition of reimagining policing is and helping out communities and such. So I carved out space in my special to talk to the city councilwoman who oversees the neighborhood that George Floyd was killed in and who is on the city council trying to help reimagine what policing looks like, named Andrea Jenkins. And she's an incredible woman, first Black trans woman ever elected to public office. And so she was able to walk people through and really clarify what it means to allocate some funds to, you know, mental health workers and other people who really want to help in keeping, you know, policing good and safe, and then also facilitating help when sometimes it isn't an armed officer that you need. Sometimes it's a counselor. Sometimes it's an expert, and really laying out why that makes sense. And so that was really, it was really good to be able to open space and center somebody in my comedy show who was able to sort of lay out what all that meant in the landscape of the world. So it was pretty cool.
You also addressed the virus and I would say our COVID response, but of course there was none from the federal government. Have you been able to figure out, we were talking about it before the show, why that happened, and in particular, why of all the things that have happened in this bizarre year, why the current occupant of the White House chose to make masks the hill that he would not climb?
It's so fascinating because me being born and raised in Minnesota, I just love talking to your audience, you know, being in Maine, you know, I understand rugged individualism. I understand a lot of that. I don't understand why people were all of a sudden like a mask is anathema to all that is freedom for me. I saw a woman who was standing with a sign that said, I will not suffocate my unborn child.
Oh God.
And I was like, you're wearing pants. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't even understand anymore what it is that the freedom is that people are saying they don't have. There's many things we cover up on a daily basis. We're not walking around naked. You know, it's interesting how people forget. If you live in a neighborhood or amongst people, you kind of have a social contract with them to say, you know what I'm going to try to do? Not get you sick. Because it also benefits me. But instead, the weirdness of, you know, the my body, my choice men, who are the same people who are, you know, standing outside of reproductive health clinics holding signs saying, I get to have a say in your body. The irony is not lost on people with a uterus. Trust me.
What was the biggest challenge of the quarantine for you, Liz?
Wow. You know, that has been a hard one. But I think the biggest challenge of the quarantine for me was I, like so many people, had relatives who had also multiple illnesses in their family. I had a sister with ALS who passed away in September. And so not being able to see her and not being able to care for her until I decided, one of the reasons I also came back to Minnesota understanding I could do my show was also so I could be a caregiver. So I came back in quarantine so that I could also caregive for her in her last months. And so, you know, just watching how everybody was really suffering with just dealing with COVID and being separated from loved ones in and of themselves. And then everybody else has another story to tell, right? About an elderly parent, about somebody else who was either suffering from COVID or was in a nursing home or a facility that they couldn't see. And so I think I was in the camp of people who, you know, had to be separated from loved ones who I knew didn't have a long period left on earth, and to try to figure out how to make that happen. So that was pretty rough.
You mentioned the second half of the special took place after the election. That confuses me because I understand from the president and his crack legal team of Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe that the election's not over.
Well, you know, my show's not for everyone. And I have to say, the people who enjoy my show the most are the people who actually believe the election's over. You know, for the 70 million people who are following Giuliani into some, I don't know, crack-addled rage, they're not going to enjoy. But the insistence with which Trump and co, and especially the cronies who and the surrogates, and like, did every lawyer say no? I feel like LegalZoom was like, nope. It was like Giuliani was left. LegalZoom's like, we do wills. We don't do this. And now, you know, I'm sure you've all seen, you know, the woman going viral in Michigan who looked like she was sipping the white wine in the afternoon before she picked up the kids in the van. It's all just a mesmerizing thing. I just don't understand how hoaxing could be so profound, and that we all just had the wool pulled over our eyes by, you know, the deep state and the QAnons and the carrying on, because it seems real. People are very upset.
I want to talk about media. We mentioned you were the founder of Air America, and progressive voices are out there, and certainly with an agenda, but. I always feel like, yes, there are people on the left who have a point of view, and they express that in the broadcast world, but they're not out there openly lying and spreading conspiracy theories. Yeah, how do we, and I'm a First Amendment person, but how do we hold accountable those outlets that amplify and provide a platform for just absolute, not only disturbing, but dangerous nonsense?
I mean, isn't that true? I mean, I feel like that is it. Whoever can solve this problem, you know, is the person that's going to give us democracy back. You know, one idea I had was maybe we could force anybody who is reading the news or giving information or making public statements to have to wear those shock collars that we make dogs wear. And then it's programmed so that every time it lies, it gets shocked and it's just jolted. So we just watch it happen.
And then Hannity would look like he was in a Cronenberg film.
Yeah, I know. He would be Cronenberg, actually. Turn into Cronenberg.
The special is called Corona Borealis, A Night of Comedy Under Stars. Available right now, Vimeo, video on demand. And the proceeds benefit a group that you've been working with for a while now, Abortion Access Force. Can you talk about the work that's being done there?
Sure. What we're trying to do is, as we just talked about, dispel the myths around access to abortion, what abortion is, try to remove some of the stigma, because unintended pregnancy happens to 1 in 4 people who are reproductive age, and, you know, circumstances are different, and it's very important for me that when it comes to a full plate of equality that every citizen deserves, the right to choose and reproductive freedom should be on that plate, because when the government decides what you can do with your body, you are no longer a full citizen of that government. And it also puts a blockade between you and your path to self-determination. And I just want to make sure that every citizen has that full path open to them. And if they stumble, that's on their own, but nobody should get in the way of it.
What poses a greater danger to women's reproductive rights going forward? Is it the Supreme Court and the shift that's taken place there, or those hundreds of federal judgeships that Trump has appointed?
That's a really good question. I think that it goes one step earlier than that. It is the state legislatures that are passing laws that have nothing to do with protecting the health of anybody who's pregnant, that are all designed to just, you know, harm people. And those laws go through the federal courts and eventually to the Supreme Court. So it's all kind of a fine complement of bad news. And so I think changing the hearts and minds and having people talk about their own experiences of why they may have chosen abortion, why it's important to have access to birth control and access to comprehensive sex ed out there in the world, so that people can make healthy choices. And I think we have to really focus on what that is, because not only are people trying to regulate abortion, they're also trying to regulate birth control. They're trying to regulate how we talked about sex ed in schools and with our kids. And if you hold back information, you know, you don't live in a world where there's unicorns and abstinence. You know, like there is no such thing the most fun we can have is sex, and it's free, and so it's going to happen all the time, and how are we going to do it safely and make sure that the outcomes of it are what everybody wants? And so I think that we really have to pay attention to our state legislatures. I know you have had some fine, fine governors in the past who have been not great on reproductive issues. I'm thinking Paul LePage,
yes,
specifically. And so I think that, you know, pay attention locally, because right now with the courts so full and so stacked full of people that have radical agendas, that if we can control the laws that go through the courts and have it be not these laws that don't make any sense, we can do a good job of staving off some kind of bad things that could help overturn Roe v. Wade.
All right, on a lighter note, Liz, we're pikers compared to Minnesota, only about 5,000 rivers, lakes, and streams here in Maine. But I'm curious, for future reference, how good an audience is a kayak audience?
Here's what's hilarious. So, you know, when you're planning for something, there's just things you don't think about. And the kayak audience was fairly good. Like, that part was really good. There was a certain amount of using your paddle. We had people anchored, but using your paddle so that you could be watching me. The thing that I didn't allow for, and this is going to make you laugh really hard, is when you shoot a special in the woods at night, your ambient sound is crickets. And so to a comedian, the term, how'd your joke go? If it dies, you go cricket. So anytime I took a pause, or if I did a joke that just had a marginal laugh point or didn't land, you just hear cricket.
Oh.
And cricket. So I did edit out some crickets, I'm not going to lie, because it was hilarious. At one point, I was like, oh my God, every moment there is just crickets.
And Liz, before we let you go, what would you be willing to pay if you had the need for a preemptive pardon from the president?
What would I pay? Wait, I don't think I understand the question.
Well, he's giving out, apparently, these preemptive pardons, not specifying what they're for. That seems to be like a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yes, his quid pro quo payment.
Yeah.
What would I pay to get a pardon from Donald Trump? I would pay nothing, because I feel like if Donald Trump threw me in jail, I could make a big enough stink to get pardoned by a legitimate president.
The term legitimate president, I have a vague recollection of what that was in the past. I look forward to, 50 days away doing that once again. It was fun.
Yes, it's in the history books. Read about them. Legitimate presidents, they exist. There was 44 of them.
Liz's new special, Corona Borealis, A Night of Comedy Under the Stars, available on Vimeo Video On Demand. Liz, it's been a real treat for us to talk with you. Can't wait to watch the special. We appreciate you making time for us today.
Oh, thanks so much. I really appreciate you having me.
Liz Winstead with us on Downtown.